You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com. Ready-Made Resources is a trusted name in the prepper community because they've been around for 18 years. They offer great prices on night vision, water filtration, long-term storage food, solar energy components, and provide free technical service. Get ready for an uncertain future at ReadyMadeResources.com. Trading Post in the Woods is ran by veteran crisis responders who know how important it is to be prepared. They specialize in comprehensive natural survival remedy kits, preparedness and homesteading supplies, as well as skills training. Visit them online today at tradingpostinthewoods.com. Hey, preppers and patriots. This is my guest appearance on The Self-Sufficient Life with Tim Young. Enjoy the show.
Some men get trapped in the purple haze of life only to see the light when God himself answers their prayers from the county jail. Hey, it's Tim Young of TheSelfSufficientLife.com, and today I'll share the story of a man who kicked his drug addiction to become a prepper and best-selling author of post-apocalyptic Christian novels. Kentucky is called the bourbon capital of the world, but why is that? Maybe there's something in the water. And actually there is. The state sits atop vast deposits of blue limestone, and supposedly that filters out hard iron and imparts sweet-tasting calcium and magnesium. But another reason is Kentucky's fertile farmland. It's well-suited for growing corn, and bourbon has to be made from a grain mixture that's at least 51% corn. So with whiskey and know-how in abundance, it's a fair bet there was a lot of hell-raising going on around those fertile farms where Mark Goodwin was raised.
I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and spent a lot of time on my grandparents' farm in the summers. Both sets of my grandparents both had farms, so I grew up hunting and being involved with gardening and things like that. So I had this sort of preparedness mindset already in the back of my head from a very young age. And then I was in Boy Scouts, and of course, be prepared is the motto. And as I grew older, I lost touch with all of that.
No one used the term prepper back then, but as a youngster, Mark was introduced to the preparedness mindset with the best preppers in the business, the Boy Scouts. But he wasn't prepared for life's temptations after high school.
Just kind of got out into the world, and having fun was sort of my priority. And during my 20s, worked in the restaurant business, ended up working in nightclubs, which got me a really nice drug addiction problem.
It's not that uncommon a tale at this point. In both the city and the country, kids often get out of school and begin just drifting through life. No rudder, no real goal, no sense of purpose. Just taking it day by day, man, until they find a job or a hobby or something that interests them.
Well, the hobby was smoking pot. And then the rest of the life was going to a job that, and working in restaurants and bars. It was everybody parties together after work. Everybody goes out drinking and smokes pot after work. And that's just sort of the lifestyle.
Oh, it's a lifestyle, all right. But not one that will get you anywhere good. Because when you fall into that world of addiction, it becomes your sole purpose in life. You're not going to get ahead. You simply work so you can afford to get high.
But it's this hand to mouth existence, because if you some of the nightclubs I worked in, you made really, really good money. Like you could make, $300 or $400 a night in tips, and but you'd go blow it all after work. So you'd go to an after hours club and you'd spend every bit of it, so you were always just, let's make rent, and then after rent, everything else is for partying. So, it was horrible. It was a horrible lifestyle. But when you're in that haze, you can't even see what a disaster your life is, because you just think it's normal. And especially everybody else you're around, that's normal for them.
Man, imagine that life. $300 or $400 a night that you earn, then blow. I mean, perhaps literally if you get hooked on cocaine. It doesn't matter if it's the drug-induced lifestyle Mark fell into or a high-paying corporate job. When someone gets used to that steady stream of money flowing, they spend it as fast as they make it. They assume it'll always be there and just live life in the fast lane. But whether you're hooked on drugs or sales pitches, that lifestyle comes at a great cost, especially when it comes to family relationships.
I was really unplugged from my family at that time. When you're living that lifestyle, family is more like, who do you smoke pot with? Who are you drinking with? You know, that's kind of like your family du jour, sort of, so to speak. And, you know, the alcohol and the pot, that was my family, you know, and it controlled my life. Everything that I did revolved around that. And it's very, very difficult to have any other real relationships with other people when you've got this this false relationship with the drugs and the alcohol, and that's all you see, and it controls your life.
Without family intervention, it was hard for Mark to break that cycle. He either needed a goal that became important enough to force him to kick the habit, or needed some other source of outside influence, something that would force him to change.
The point was a DUI. That and everybody, as soon as they get to jail, they get religious, you know. God help me, get me out of here, and I will never do it again. You know, and then the second you get out, oh, never mind, God, they let me out. I was court ordered to go to a recovery program. So, and I just chose to make the most of that, you know, rather than all the other things that had ever happened to me. You know, it was all, oh, well, that happened because I wasn't smart enough, or I wasn't fast enough, or whatever. And at this point, I just said, you know, this happened because I'm an addict, and it's time to change, and I'm done with it. And at that point, it was really starting to not be fun anymore. You know, there's a period of drinking and smoking pot every night that's fun, and then there's a point to where it starts burning out your brain cells, and it's the same old thing all the time, and there's no real relationships with people, and there's no hopes, and there's no dreams, and you see that it's killing you, and it's stealing your life.
For the first time in his adult life, Mark decided to take responsibility for his actions. No excuses, no finger pointing, just get control and do something positive. But first, he had to break some seriously entrenched habits.
I got sober, and then I had to learn to live, you know, without drinking and without getting high and without partying. And I started a podcast, and I was really tired of the restaurant business. I'd been sober for several years. And it's just not as fun of a job when you're the only one that's sober. It's not fun to be around a bunch of drunks or people that even live that lifestyle, because you don't have anything in common with these people at all. And so, I'd went back to school, got my degree in accounting, got a job in accounting, hated it. The boss was just a complete jerk. And I didn't last there very long at all. And besides him being a jerk, I hated the monotony of the entering the numbers, and I hated the fine attention to detail. I'm kind of a big picture person, which I probably wouldn't have never found out had it not been for the accounting. So it did teach me a lot about myself, but it was kind of an expensive lesson to learn it through going all the way through, get a degree in something that you absolutely hate, to find out that, well, that's all about details, and you're a big picture person. You have, you know, details are just not your thing at all.
So Mark spent several years and a fair amount of money chasing an accounting profession, only to find out that wasn't his cup of tea. Well, at least he was off drugs, right? But why did he even want to pursue a career in accounting if he hates that kind of work? That circles back to the preparedness mindset cultivated in his youth. After he got out of school and got lost in the sea of drugs, his thinking became clouded. The only prepping tool he took in his everyday carry pack was a roach clip. But now that the fog of purple haze had lifted and cleared, Mark saw the world in a new way, a way that alarmed him.
After several years of being sober, I experienced the 2008 financial crisis, which was very scary to me, more scary than 9/11, because I can understand what happened in 9/11. At least I thought I did at the time, you know. Whereas the financial crisis, that's something that I had no understanding of, and I didn't understand why it was happening. And that's one of the things that really made me want to dive into accounting and start to understand finance. And I thought that was a good path to understand that better, which it was. And it did get me on going down some trails to better understand economics and how money works in this country, which I didn't at all because it's not taught in schools.
I think what Mark's talking about there is the Federal Reserve and the process of monetary creation. And he's right. It's not taught in schools. And most of us adults don't really understand what money is and how perilous the whole system is. We teach our kids what a nickel, dime, quarter, and a dollar are as we fill their piggy banks. Well, I mean, I guess I'm dating myself. Now we transfer bitcoins to their digital wallets or send them digital gift cards that they can digitally trade for digital stuff. The whole world has gone virtual, and that's what Mark and other preppers fear is happening with the money supply. It's a digital house of cards that, according to Mark, we're taught to not understand.
I think that we're intentionally dumbed down to not understand things of that nature, and I wanted to understand that so that I could better hedge myself for it. And the more I started to understand, that our entire economy in this country is a house of cards, and it could just literally come crashing down at any moment. And so that's what really started me off on this path of preparedness that I've not looked back on, and has really energized me to stand up on the hillside with a bullhorn and scream to everybody else, get ready now.
Hearing Mark say he wants to stand on a hillside and scream, get ready now, brings to mind a story we all know. The story of Noah and the Ark, when Noah pleaded with everyone to get ready for a great flood, something no one had ever seen. And while just over half of Americans publicly claim that they believe in biblical stories such as the one about Noah, others believe in scientific claims that the flood never happened. So take your pick, choose your side, and whatever side you choose, that same division of beliefs applies to the prepper mindset as well. On the one hand is the non-preppers. They go about their lives fully dependent on others for everything. They may have good jobs, but produce nothing themselves that can keep them safe and alive. If nothing bad ever happens, they'll feel smart that they didn't waste time doing something they consider to be foolish, like building an ark. But if something bad does happen, like a long-term grid failure or severe economic collapse, they'll be in big trouble. And then there's those who embrace preparedness. Most are common sense people who somehow had their eyes open to how dependent they are on a fragile system for food, shelter, water, employment, pretty much everything. And once you had your eyes open and see something yourself, you can't unsee it. So they spend time and money storing food, learning skills, and isolating themselves to some degree from high population areas. To the non-preppers, they look and sound a bit crazy because that's how we all view people who don't share our values. It's human nature. But Mark really didn't have a choice. As I've said, he had that preparedness mindset instilled as a child, even though he buried it for a while. When Mark was locked up after his DUI, he was that guy praying, please God, please let me out. And then he did get out, only to find himself in a Christian rehab program called Faith Farm Ministries. And that's where Mark finally found inspiration and clarity for his life.
Yeah, no, I didn't really start to get any dreams or aspirations until I committed my life to Christ.
Three events happened over a period of years that would ultimately lead to Mark fully developing this preparedness mindset. And the first happened back in 1993, and that's the reason Mark ended up leaving Kentucky and heading south.
We had a really big ice storm, and I guess it was 93. And so much ice collected on the power lines, they started snapping. And we were actually completely in the middle of winter with the sub-zero temperatures and something like 2 or 3 inches of ice sitting on top of about 2 or 3 feet of snow. And the ice was building up on the tree limbs, which would then snap, and then they would hit the power lines and snap the power lines. The bridges in between, you know, Louisville's right on the Ohio River going over to Indiana. All of the bridges between Indiana and Louisville were closed. The streets were for, you know, emergency use only. And it was a horrible experience. I said, as soon as this melts off, I'm moving to Florida.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proven to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on gold and silver. Check out Silver.com today. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, and water filters. Use coupon code PREPRECON for 5% off your order at CampingSurvival.com.
That experience drove Mark to South Florida, which pretty much guaranteed he wouldn't see any ice storms. But even though the scenery had changed, the habits didn't change for years, as they tend to sell marijuana in Florida too. They say things happen in slow motion when you're stoned. That's what they tell me anyway. And it was through that slow-mo lens that Mark watched the horrors of 9/11 unfold on television.
I woke up in the middle of my haze, because I'm still in the haze. I'm still living in Miami in 2001 when the towers came down. And, you know, I watched that, and I was probably, you know, smoking off a hangover as I was watching them come down. And, you know, I said, wow, that's spooky. You know, what's getting ready to happen? What happens next? Because I was genuinely concerned that America was getting ready to make this huge dramatic change, which it did. But, you know, to use the cruise ship, illustration again, it took a long time to get turned around. And, you know, it was the little, sort of these death by a thousand cuts that has actually changed America more than the actual attack. It was the things that our own government have done to systematically strip us away from our freedoms. But that was a sort of a wake up call. But nothing that you know, a quarter bag and a six pack couldn't cure. So I was quickly lulled back to sleep.
Holy cow. Marijuana must be a great sleep aid, because I remember being more alive at that time than ever before. Like many of you, I can still recall with great clarity where I was, what I was doing, what the next few days and weeks were like. But I wasn't on drugs. Mark was. And he needed both the DUI and the 2008 crisis to fully arouse his preparedness mindset. After the recession was well underway, Mark lost interest in both drugs and his accounting job. But he was still searching for direction in life.
And then so I was really searching and praying and asking God for direction in what was I going to do? Because here I am. I've just spent like a huge chunk of time to studying a field that I have no interest in. And I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back into the restaurant business. I had the podcast going, Prepper Recon podcast going, and it was starting to generate a little bit of income, but certainly nothing that I could ever live off of. And I had this idea bouncing around in my head for a book that I wanted to write someday, probably after I retired, because, you know, it was going to be another futile waste of time, kind of like the accounting degree. So it wasn't something I was seriously considering. And I'm sitting in church, and the pastor stops in the middle of the sermon and says, somebody out there has got this book rolling around in their head, and they need to go home, turn off the TV, and write it. And I'm in a mega church at this time, and there's 3,500 people in the sanctuary with me. Plus, we probably had 6 or 7 satellites that were, you know, getting the video message fed to them. Plus, all the people that are watching online. I'm like, this is probably not me that he's talking to, but what if it is? So I sort of took it as a dare and said, just in case it is me, I'm going to go home and start that book. And it changed my life.
That book was called American Exit Strategy, and it's a great read. Well, actually, I listened to my copy on Audible, so it's also a great listen. It was the first book in Mark's Economic Collapse trilogy.
I wrote it. I put it up on Amazon in Kindle and paperback, and then I had it produced for audiobook, and it just started selling, and it just kind of took off.
In just a matter of years, Mark had made huge changes in his life. He traded in restaurant jobs, drugs, and alcohol for a college degree and an accounting job. But that wasn't his calling either. He found his calling back in rehab when he found religion. That led him to church, where he literally heard a booming voice from overhead as the pastor spoke into the microphone, almost commanding Mark to go write his book. But what did Mark know about writing? Well, we'll find out right after this quick break.
That's the end of the first half of my guest appearance on The Self-Sufficient Life with Tim Young. Tune in next week for the rest of the show.
In A Haunt for Jackals by best-selling author Mark Goodwin, Danny Walker's survival retreat has been devastated by violence since the detonation of the EMP. Regent Slusher's designs on absolute power have already brought him to Danny's doorstep once, leaving a trail of blood and heartbreak in his wake. Another conflict with a malicious dictator will spell certain death for the remaining members of the compound. Danny's only hope is to infiltrate Slusher's camp and bring him down from the inside. It's a risky proposition. If he is caught, he'll be executed as a spy, but there is no other alternative. In this epic struggle between good and evil, Danny's mettle will be tested, his faith will be tried, and he'll have to dig deep for the courage to continue. Buy your copy of A Haunt for Jackals, Book 3 of 7 Cows, Ugly and Gaunt, in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.